times when you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. That is so much that is not passed down to their world to talk about. And then some of the history we have is because
All right, welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. It's finally feeling like winter here. The wind is cutting through.
I haven't been outside at all, so yeah, it could be
it was
degrees.
Literally from the car to here, yeah. And I when I stopped home, I threw a football with my boys for about 10 minutes before I came here, and it was chilly. how's Joe?
Good. I'm good.
Good.
We're good.
And how's the family and stuff?
Everybody's good. It was nice.
Where did you guys go? You guys had another, did you do another trip?
Yeah. So we went to Hocking Hills this last weekend.
Pictures looked awesome.
Yes. That was the place I did. And it's sort of like,
have you been before?
No, it's a place where we really struggled to get a spot. Cause we, you know, the campgrounds are smaller there. And so we ended up staying in a state park finally, but it had to be, you know, we always tried to go on season where the weather was halfway decent.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the weather was not decent at all.
Yeah. I saw you all bundled.
Oh yeah.
The fire and
yeah. That was fun though. I really liked that, but I was figuring like I spent probably about 10 hours outside, like on a 30 degree day, an hour here, an hour here, but I spent almost an entire day outdoors. It was amazing.
That's nice. Yeah, I love being outside like that. Our kids would live outside with no shirts on. Like, yeah, it's good. What are the plans for Thanksgiving?
We're going to Nag's Head.
Nice.
So they serve little buffet turkey dinner there. So it'll be, yeah.
We're excited. We got family coming in. It's going to be good.
Sweet.
So the thing we want to jump into. So we've been talking a lot about, we did some stuff on fasting and we've done some stuff on finance and investing, and we've hit these couple of topics, and they all have to do with the same thing, which is delayed gratification.
Yes, for sure.
And I think it's something that everybody struggles with. We all want what we want. We want it now. You know, I want to buy $100 of Bitcoin, and next week it'd be nice if it was worth $4 million,
mm-hmm.
Right? Everybody right. wants that instant. We want to scratch off the lottery ticket and instantly have money. We want to. You know, oh, I went to the gym for a week and now I have abs, like, you know, and none of those things happen. And we know that the good stuff in life comes to those that will endure, those that will wait. It comes with consistency and faithfulness over time. It doesn't come very rarely. Does it come instantaneously? It's not that it can't come, but typically you have to put in and have the mindset and the work. Otherwise you won't even be able to sustain it when you do get it.
Right.
You know, the people that win the lottery usually end up going bankrupt and that sort of
right.
stuff. So talk to me about the delayed gratification process. I know we've talked about this in terms of business. Hey, you got to take the 1 yard runs, not the Hail Marys, etc. But how does Joe work in the delayed gratification? Cause you got some pretty lofty goals.
Yes.
You got some stuff that you've been working at for a while that sometimes you got to feel like, how about now? You know, it's been a year. It's been 5 years. Like, how long am I going to wait for X? So how does that work for you? How do you endure?
So this might be one of the few topics that you and I disagree vehemently on.
Okay.
And so let's talk through it because I want to hear, I mean, we've touched on this in previous episodes of us just talking privately off camera.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it on camera now.
So. Let's do it.
All right. So you said delayed gratification. And so everything in this realm is sort of has an antidote, like the opposite mm-hmm. of it. And the way that you sort of like counter something is you have to find out what its antidote is in normal okay. world. Like, so if you have anger and hate, is obviously going to be love. So if you wanted to, you know, put out the fire of anger and hate, then you figure out a way to bring love into the equation. Well, delayed gratification is a dangerous one because what I bring to the party, right, mm-hmm. is on purpose temptation.
Okay.
Right? That's the opposite to me, where if I can on purpose take something that my mind yearns for and create a dosage that sort of like makes it interesting, because delayed gratification sucks. It's boring.
Yeah.
It's on autopilot. Yeah. And you want it to be sexy. And when it gets sexy, you lose money. You lose whatever you came into the thing with. But if you could take a temptation and you can put it out there in a safe way that doesn't like ruin everything in your world, right? That is a perfect counterweight to sticking in there and hanging tight till you get your payoff.
So what I'm hearing is the temptation is the motivation, right?
Yes.
It's something that you desire anyway. So give me an example of how Joe's done that in Joe's world. So you wanted something, and rather than it feeling like a drudging on this delayed gratification, you've picked something and gone, all right, I want that. And so this tempts me. I'm going to put that in front of me. And I know if I pursue that, I'm going to get that.
Right. And so it's just far enough along where it keeps safe. So for instance, I like wine, right? Okay. And when I'm doing fasting, I really can't eat some of the foods I really like or drink some of the things that I like to drink. And so what I'll do is, you know what, I'm going to serve this out. I'm going to make it last long. And if I go another couple of days, I'm going to buy myself a really nice bottle of wine. So when I do finally drink that, it's going to be a better wine, glass of wine than I normally have. So it's a temptation to have a little bit better to get me through some more of those delayed days.
Okay. So let me play devil's advocate. My dad always would say to me when I would say I would play devil's advocate, why do you want to be his advocate? Does he really need help?
He's but, frowning at you right now.
He is. I can feel it. but the truth is, you know, I've done this so many times in my health journey where I'm like, I really want to be able to eat pizza, or I really want to be able to eat. So when I lose 15 pounds, then I'm going to eat the pizza. And I try and dangle that carrot to get me to that spot. The problem is I get to that spot and then I eat three pizzas or I eat pizza for a week or whatever it is.
Well, that's why I said it's dangerous to do this method. It really is. Okay. You got to be in control of it. It's got to be something that, you know, will sort of elicit the response that you want without undermining what the eventual goal was to be.
Yeah. So by definition, a temptation is something that you desire typically beyond your control.
Yes.
So you're saying there's a real fine line.
If you do it on your terms and you set the parameters before, like if it was a real temptation, then you'd give into it because you chemically and naturally want something. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, you know, you want something, you don't really want it. Like, so for instance, you were toying around with the intermittent fast and you weren't hungry.
One. Yeah.
Right. So once you knew that typically you'd be wanting something right now, if you inauthentically brought something in the world, your mind wouldn't be yearning for it, but your decision would be yearning for it.
It's the Pavlov dogs for kind of syndrome, 100%. Like ring the bell, your mouth waters because we fed you. I was just having this conversation with Brandon today. You know, he was my car buddy. We drove out to Akron. We were together all day. But I said to him, you know, Sam has been so regimented with the kids. They eat at, you know, 7:30, noon, and 5. And so we redid the chairs at church the other day, and I had an emergency. I had to run to the hospital, and then I came back, and I said, look, I said, it's probably going to be another hour and a half to get the rest of this done. I said, why don't you and the kids come over, and they can help put pens and envelopes in and all this stuff. And I like setting up the chairs. I like my room to look a certain way. I'm a little CDO, OCD, when it comes to that stuff. So I had my measuring tape out, was making sure everything was perfect and stuff like that. But we got there at like 4:30 and 5:10 rolls around. And our kids are like, what time is it? We're like, it's 5:10. They're like, we have to eat. And we're like, we don't have to eat. Like, we'll eat in a little bit. We're going to be done. You know, and Sam's like, well, we'll go out, you know, grab something and bring it back to the house, you know, whatever. The kids were like, No, you don't understand it. It's 5:00. We have to eat. And it was like Pavlov ringing the bell.
Yeah, you had a mutiny on your hands.
They were like, oh, I'm so hungry. They're laying on the ground. And we're like, we'll get Wendy's. We'll get whatever. Just shut up and keep moving. You know, we got to get this done. And but it's so true. You have those habits, those things in place that you don't even think about. It's not that you're hungry. Well, it's 5:00. And we always eat at 5:00. And so the kids were like, feed me now.
Right.
We do that as adults. We have those, you know, neural pathways set up. We have those habits set up, those rituals, those traditions, and we just do it that way all the time. And so to deviate from that, you're not necessarily doing it because you're fulfilling some sort of need. You're doing it out of habit. How do you switch that? You know, there's lots of books out there about creating new habits, new neural pathways, et cetera. You know, when we're talking about this delayed gratification style of things, you're doing a lot of the things in your life subconsciously because you just built these routines. So how do you flip the script on yourself and go, all right, I'm not eating because I'm not hungry, to use that illustration. I'm eating because I always eat at 12:00, or I'm eating this crap because I always drive by that McDonald's, so I always stop at that McDonald's. Like, you've built those neural pathways, not because the food's good or it tastes good or you're hungry, but that's just what I do. And when you want to switch a new habit, right, they say 31 days to make a habit, or 60 days, or whoever you talk to has a, you know, there's a scheme to it. But to create a new neural pathway and a new habit, it's got to take some time. It's got to take some delayed gratification because you're going to try and do those things. I don't know. Thoughts?
Yeah. So normal people can't do this at all. And that's why the big struggle is. But if you're abnormal, here's the way you have to abnormally think. Typically, when we decide to change one of those habits, we usually pick something that has injured us recently and something that's fresh in your head. Uh-huh. Those are usually the hardest ones because those are the ones that are, they got you. You have other ones in your world that are much easier to change, but they have don't have as big of an impact. So you don't want to like say, all right, let's take the most important critical thing and put all the pressure on to change a habit there. It's going to be your most difficult because your whole world is built around that pillar of you know, choice. So take something that's a little bit easier, like, you know, where you park in the morning or what breakfast you pick or something that's way easier, not a challenge.
So super interesting that you say this. So we talked about a little bit fasting a couple episodes ago, and I messed around with some intermittent fasting stuff. And one of the things that I started to do, I remember Dr. Mike saying to us that oatmeal is like one of those meals that everybody who's old that he talks to has been eating oatmeal for breakfast for like 20 years. And he goes, I don't know if there's anything to that, but a lot of the people that I have that age pretty well all eat oatmeal. Well, actually, I heard a scientist that researches people that are centenarians, so live 100 years old. Centenarians? I don't know, whatever that word is. 100 years old.
Right.
And he said most of them have a high fiber breakfast that includes some sort of steel cut oats or oatmeal. And I was like, interesting. Dr. Mike noticed that. Here's this guy saying, I think he was on TikTok or something. And so I said to my wife, we had oatmeal in there, but I'm like, I like eggs and bacon and other stuff for breakfast. And my wife makes really good breakfast potatoes. And I was like, well, maybe for a week, I'll just try and have oatmeal every day. And I did. I put a banana and cinnamon. I didn't do any sugar or honey or any of that sort of stuff. I said, I'm going to sweeten it naturally. I'll use banana and use some cinnamon. And it was really good. And I did that the first day. I was kind of like, this is kind of bland. And the second day, third day. And now I'm almost 10 days that were, for the most part, I've pretty much eaten. I think I had one day where I had eggs with my wife. But other than that, I've done the oatmeal. And it's like for me now, when she asks me for breakfast, I'm not thinking, before I was thinking eggs, but I'm already starting to switch and I can feel myself being like, I kind of want oatmeal. Like even the smell of cinnamon, we use cinnamon. She baked some bread or something the other day and had cinnamon. And I came in, I was like, I want oatmeal when I smelled the cinnamon.
Reassociation.
Exactly. And I think that's what you're talking about is, hey, you're not going to change your whole lifestyle, but maybe we can change one meal. You're not going to change everything, but let's pick a low hanging fruit here. Let's fast lunch or whatever. And choose one small thing rather than one big thing.
Yeah. And remember, it escalates. So usually when we get into these habits, it's because it was something small and it became something big. So like, let's just say you drink a lot of sugary soda pop, right? So I'll go from Pepsi to Faygo, right? It tastes a little bit worse, not quite as good, but now it's...
I don't even know what Faygo is.
Faygo is like a generic brand of Pepsi. So Faygo, right? And then you go from Faygo to maybe like a Sprite. So now it tastes different. It's not the same. It's not as sweet. It's different in a way, but it's bubbly and it's sort of the same, but you're not as in love with it as Pepsi. And then you go to like Pellegrino, which not even sweet anymore. And it's kind of bubbly, but I'm like weaning myself out of this. And then eventually you're down to water, but might take you four steps before you get there.
Well, do you think it's better to wean or better to cold turkey?
I'm not gonna say I'm a wiener, but
you almost did. I saw it coming and I was like, no way.
I said
it's
it.
It's gonna be on blooper reels.
Yes, I am a wiener. I wean.
So you wean.
I do. I wean.
You wean.
For the wean.
Oh, for the wean. Oh, let's see how many times you can say that. Oh, that's too funny.
Some of the hard ones, you use the attrition state to get out of.
Yeah.
Some of the ones that are easier, you could just be like, yep, I don't like popcorn anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. And it's just as good.
Yeah. No, when I got married, I grew up in a house that had a lot of soda in the house. And when I got married, Sam was like, we don't keep soda in the house. And I was like, well, I want to be married to you, so I guess we won't keep soda in the house. And then I would buy it and bring it home. She'd be like, what is this doing in the house? And it took us a little bit, but you couldn't find soda in my house. Occasionally, if we had like a New Year's Eve party, she might get some soda or whatever because, you know, we're having people over. But other than that, it's not there. And what I found was when it's not there, I don't drink it as much and I don't want it as much. And I know that seems like, well, duh. But, you know, some of those things were taking her habits and allowing them to affect and permeate. So it wasn't necessarily cold turkey. And I didn't necessarily actively think about it. Like I'll still have a Diet Coke when I go out or whatever. I know that's full of all sorts of chemicals that are pickling my brain cells and doing horrible things to my body, but the bubbles are
nice. You know it. You know it though, right?
Yeah. So I'm drinking this. I'm like, please be strong. So, but you know, how do you navigate let's pick a theoretical example. Let's pick something in finance, right? So you want to begin, we talked about investing or you want to make some more money. Like, What are some small incremental things that people can begin doing?
Well, the addiction part of investing in finance is that let's flip it and say, I want you to invest and I want you to invest $200 a week. And I want to do it in the blind, no matter whether the stock or the bond or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So you buy it, just not even knowing where it is. Mm-hmm. Could you deprive yourself of the stimulus of knowing whether or not you bought it high or bought it low? Yeah. And if you just got in the habit of doing it, not without that stimulus.
Yeah.
Be a rough one, right?
That's a good question.
Right.
Yeah.
So to answer the previous one, let me give this last one. So I create these trigger points. Mm-hmm. And so when you're getting into a new habit, it's equally as essential to find out like when you're in control, like when you really have a handle on it. Some people, like when they first wake up, they're most in control of their schedule. They pick the time they wake up, the first thing they do when they get out of bed and whatever. So if you're going to build a new thing in it, you're going to put it in a spot where it's not going to be somebody's fault that you couldn't do it. If you do it like at your lunch break at work, what's going to happen? Like,
Can you take care of one more thing? I couldn't get to it today.
And then boom, your habits, and, you know, totally.
Well, my boss asked, and then you have the excuse too. You have the out.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have trigger points, it's probably time to invent a couple of them and find something like, you know, I'm in clear mind when I'm brushing my teeth. So try to tag something along with something I'm doing already.
Yeah. Yeah, I do some of my, this just sounds so weird. Everybody at Bridge of Hope, you ready? I do some of my best thinking in the shower and on the toilet.
Okay.
And
that's admirable.
I always take my phone in with me. Sometimes, all right, I'm doing the scroll. Hey, you know, let me like a few things on Facebook. But 9 times out of 10, I'm punching away on a note, or I've had some of my best sermon ideas in the shower. And I'm like, hold on a second. I got to write that down because I don't want to forget it. You create those spaces though, you know, you're saying those routines. So like, I know like my mind is in a spot. I said to you, when I got here, you know, I've been listening to a couple of podcasts, and where I do that, I either do it in the car while I'm driving somewhere. Or I do it when I cut the grass each week. I know I have an hour and a half slot. Grass has to get cut. Leaves have to get mulched right now, all of that. And so I know I have that slot. So I will redeem the time and go, all right, instead of this being an hour and a half of me just pushing the lawnmower back and forth, I'm going to get some exercise, and I'm going to find a good hour and a half long podcast that's going to feed me in some way or challenge me in some way. And by doing those little switches, because before I would put in some music and that's fine too. But, you know, I said, I really want to be intentional with this time because it's an hour and a half every week, and it can be like nothing happens, or I can start retaining some new information. I can start challenging myself. Right. That's where a lot of the intermittent fasting came from. You and I were talking about it. I found this podcast on fasting. It was an hour and a half long, and I put it in and I went and I cut the grass. The next thing I knew, the grass was cut, and I'd learned about 4 different types of fasting from different people, experts. And I was like, wow, that's really fascinating. And I was able to, that's what launched me into my intermittent fasting test.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love that sort of concept of, hey, let's find a spot in my schedule that, you know, I already know I'm going to have to cut the grass. So what can I do in that space to redeem that time? You know, I do a lot of my phone calls in the car. I know you're not supposed to be on the phone in the car. Ohio, it's you know, you can be on the phone, but you got to be hands-free or whatever. I love when I have a half-hour drive somewhere or 40-minute drive, because then I'll go, hey, I want to call these 5 people. I need to call this person back. I need to do this. I can do some counseling. I can pray for somebody. I can do a lot of different things in that window, where if I'm at the office, sometimes I'm like, you know what? I have these 6 things to do. I know I could call them right now, but I could do that a different time. And it lets me redeem the car time. And it's a time and space where it's already set aside for me. My wife has been super consistent. She wakes up at 5:30, goes to the gym every day. Now she's a little more tired at night, but she's been doing it, I think, coming up on 3 weeks now, 2 weeks. And she doesn't do anything crazy. Goes, walks on the treadmill. She might run a little bit. She hits the massage chair up, which she likes. And, but for her, she's created a space where the kids can't bother me. They're asleep. Mm-hmm. Doug can't tell me no, he's asleep. Right. And there's nobody here at the gym, and you know, it's barely open. Cause they change their hours on the weekends and stuff at Planet Fitness. But, I have nobody to blame but me. Can I get up with the alarm and go? And she's done really great with it. But that's the sort of stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's one of those temptations where she took something that she took a little fringe benefit of doing something that she should be doing. And she leveraged that into, you know, making it appeal to her in a different way than it was otherwise would.
Yeah.
So back to your investing thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're really reassociating the time and being able to reclaim some of that to be mm-hmm. able to get value out of free space. You were doing something else. Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, I got this. Let me put it over here and get something from it. Now, do you have any stipulation of what you have to get from it, or is it anything but nothing is better than nothing?
So for me, I started with crypto. So I have a traditional 403B. I have some of that sort of investing, but I wanted to get my hands on, like, how do I learn how to do this? You know, whether it was the stock market, whether it was real estate, we spent some time talking about those, and I've done some reading. I watched some YouTube videos, and I'm just trying to figure out how to make my money work for me. And as great as it is to put it in an account and forget about it and somebody else play with it, I'm like, I kind of want to know what I'm doing. I kind of want to know what's out there, and I kind of want to be more invested than just, hey, I put it in there. Yay me, you know? And so we took $500 and we opened a separate account, so it's not going to mess with our bills or anything. We put, actually went to a whole separate bank because they're going to give us money for opening an account, which was nice. And I was like, all right, well, this is what we're going to do. And so we told the bank, like, this is our plan with the account, put the $500 in there, and I bought a couple $100 in crypto. And now I'm just kind of watching and learning. And I've read a bunch of articles, and so I tried to buy a smattering. And one of the things that I learned with crypto is they all pretty much move the exact same way. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a small altcoin. And there's a few deviations, but for the most part, everything tracks with Bitcoin, which I find to be kind of interesting, which could be a whole nother topic for another day. But, you know, after a week or two, I'm down some. But for me, I knew going into this, I wanted to see where I was at 30 days, 60 days, and 90 days in my head. And I'm just in it to learn at this point. If I lost all $500, and I didn't put 500 in, just a couple hundred. But even if I lost all 500, I was going, all right, I want to come out of this. This is an investment in me. I want to come out of this with an experience and an understanding of how the ebbs and flows of this work, which way. And so I'm trying to read articles on the ones that I bought and why I bought them, trying to understand more how it works. And so for me, I'm going, this is a $500 educational process I'm going through, similar to what we talked about. And so if I get zero out of it, I'm okay with that. Now, God willing, I'll learn a few things and maybe it'll tick in my favor, but I'm not planning on retiring on $500 crypto investment. I want to learn so that when I'm blessed with an opportunity to put thousands in, I know what to do with it.
So if, let's just say you took Bob's cryptocurrency class, and it was $500 was the cost, and you go into it thinking, okay, well, I'm going to pay some guy to tell me what crypto is all about. And I'd leave there with some education and some information that I didn't have before. Right. So instead of hiring Bob, you hire Doug. Doug's going to teach you how to do this. Yeah. So if you just traded yourself to carve out some time to be able to learn and experience and buy all the information you can't really feel bad, even if it goes to zero,
right?
Because you're in it for the purchase of information, not the appreciation of it. You're not doing it as an investment.
Right.
This is a token gesture to garner information. Yep. Because on the sidelines, you wouldn't learn in depth as if you had something staked in the game.
Exactly. And you make different decisions.
Yes.
You know, it's, they even have, you know, games on your iPhone that you can play that, you know, you can pretend invest, you can put in fake money and, you know, that sort of stuff, but it's not the same thing.
No. When I play blackjack with
poker,
no real money,
yeah.
I put 15,000 on a hand and I'm like, I'd probably never do that.
Right. Never 100,000,000 years. Yeah. So it's the same thing. So when you have a little skin in the game, you think about it differently. Like, I was watching to see maybe one of the smaller coins would bump up and then, well, should I sell that? And should I, you know, try and move it over? And we're talking $60, $10. It's not a ton of money. And so it was just an opportunity to learn. And so I'm hoping that over the next 30, 60, and 90 days, I can kind of watch the trends. I can learn how it's going to ebb and flow. I might try and sell one and buy another, trade one. It's just
well, can I teach you about that a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so early on in Bitcoin, there was not a whole lot of trading liquidity. And there was really only two exchanges that we had access to here in the United States.
Binance and Coinbase or...
Coinbase, and it was one other one. I can't remember what it was. And so basically I set up accounts on both of them. What I realized that both of the exchanges did not have the same prices at the same time. So it might be $100 on one and it might be like $110 on the other. So what I was doing is I was like, okay, well, I'll sell it over here and then move it over here. And I just like made $10 and went back and forth and back and forth. And I was just playing the exchanges against one another, sending it over here, selling it, sending it back over here, buying it. You know, just kept doing that. So then I wrote a program that would actually do that.
Do it where for you.
We would go back and forth. And so if when I started doing that, eventually the arbitrage that between the markets, they did that electronically.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that.
This is DoorDash.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Thank you. You
Thank
too.
You. Have a good night.
And so the,
who says you can't do a podcast?
That's
order
right. So, we would do arbitrage between the two markets.
That
and
smells
then
so good, by the way,
then the pricing then started, you know, when I started doing, then other people started doing it and started equalizing so that we were fractions of a fraction.
Yeah, yeah.
So think about it. computers are basically saying, okay, well, I've been riding on this value and it's gone up by X amount of percent. So the algorithm says that I'm going to move it into one of the other coins that hasn't done that. So they're all moving in line because those computers are moving it between different coins to preserve an increase in value. And then all it does is add value to another coin because that's where we stored it and whatever. And if it happens in succession, that's the end result.
Interesting. So are you a Bitcoin owner?
Yes.
Do you own any other coins?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
It's always been Bitcoin. I have the most amount in Bitcoin, but I'm a Doge fan.
Yeah.
Only because it's fun to watch.
I bought $20 just to tip my hat to
Woo-hoo!
Elon. Yeah. I figure if Elon tweets about it again, it'll spike up and I can sell it.
Yeah, you can do like 60% on that sucker.
And it was nice to have more than like 0.0001 of a coin. Like I actually have a coin.
Yes, right.
Which is fun. But so I'm just looking to learn it. And I just find it so interesting. You know, you watch the spike and, you know, some of them are up like 300% this year. And, you know, of course, if you're in it for a week, well, I've lost money this week, but if you're in it for a month or 3 months or whatever, you know, trajectory being what it's been.
Hey, you know, that's a temptation too, by the way.
What's that?
The temptation to be able to look at a loss before you sell something is a temptation that you're conjuring up. Like if you sold and realized the loss, then you're allowed to feel about it, but you're tempting yourself the opposite of that by look at if I sold now, it would really suck kind of thing.
Oh,
so
interesting.
And that's the coolest, the theme that keeps this show going is that there's no such thing as a Hail Mary. There's not one time, whether or not we're talking spirituality, doesn't get good or bad all in one slot.
Yep.
Finance doesn't get good or bad all in one slot. These are a series of decisions that you make, right? The culmination of the whole sum of everything you make equals an end.
Yeah. So how do you endure when you have the losses, right? You know, we're talking about the delayed gratification. So, and I know what Joe's going to say before I ask this question. It's not a loss. I'm learning stuff. But, you know, most people are looking at that and going, all right, a week, a month, 2 months, let's say it continues to go down. You know, you look at that and you're saying you don't realize the loss till you sell it, which is true. But, you know, you have that. And in your mind, you're going like, well, you know, is there ever a moment where you're like, all right, I just have to hold on. I'm sure you've had times in business where you're looking at the budget, you're looking at your employees going, all right, we just got to hold on. It's about to be a wild quarter. I don't know how we're going to make it. I don't know how we're going to. Yeah, I'm sure you've had some of those. Hey, we got to rub a nickel and got to get a roll of duct tape and make this work. You know, how do you get through those seasons where everyone else would look at it? And I know perception is everything. Everyone else would say, wow, man, like he's struggling. They're in a tight season. But realistically, you're just enduring through a low and you're going to come up out the other side.
Let me teach the other side. So Netflix this stock was a bitch to me. I every time I look at it, I still feel terrible about it. So let me talk about
okay.
it. So I bought Netflix and
feisty about it.
The language gets obnoxious when I talk about Netflix. So I bought this sucker at, you know, I traded it between like $60 and $100 and whatever. And I said, okay, my out is $700. So I'm going to buy in at 120. It's going to take a little while to get there, but I'm going to get out at 700 or something like that, some of that effect. So I did. I set my goal. I put my sell order in. It got to 700 and I sold. That's like quadrupling of the money. That's a really good sell. But then I watched it as it continued to go beyond 7 and beyond 8, beyond 9, and it just kept going up. And I was like, what the heck did I do? But I was like, I decided what I wanted. It did exactly what I should be happy, right? And so it reminded me that if you felt like
you're missing out.
I did. Yeah. Mm. And it reminded me of a story where, you know, Bob got a raise and he was super happy about his raise. And he went home to his wife, was telling about his raise. He found out that his raise wasn't as big as Tom's. And he went to work feeling like he got shafted somehow when he was just happy like 30 seconds ago. But when you compared it against something that you're not involved in, you forget to feel bad about it.
Joe.
There's a scripture.
That reminds me of a scripture. You knew it was coming. Uh-oh.
They heard it.
Good. You know, in Jesus tells us a parable of a story where a guy goes out and he hires a laborer at 9 o'clock in the morning and he offers him, you know, a day's wage at 9 o'clock. Well, they continue to go and he needs more workers. So at noon, he hires a few more and he hires them for a day wage at noon. And then a few more, he hires at 3 o'clock and a few more, he hires just an hour before they're supposed to be done. He offers them all a day wage. pays. And then they come to the end of the day, and the guys who got hired in the morning said, obviously, we're going to get paid more. He's paying these guys a day's wage. And when it came to them, they get real disgruntled and they're upset. And he goes, wait, didn't I offer to pay you the same that I offered to pay those guys? Now, there's a spiritual parallel here, you know, that even those that come into the kingdom late still get all the benefits of the kingdom of people that were raised in it, like myself, you know, are raised in a spiritual household, if that makes sense. Even somebody who comes in their 60s or 70s in that twilight hour still gets the quote unquote benefits of heaven and eternal life and all that sort of stuff. But the principle is parallel to what you're saying. A lot of times I use the adage, compare and compete and you'll live in defeat. When you start looking around at what everybody else is making or what everybody else has, I mean, that's just a recipe for disaster. And so when you get a raise and then you look at your buddy's raise or whatever, and then you're like, well, mine was only 2% and he got 8% or whatever, yep. You know, there's a number of factors in that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, finance is easy because, you know, you can constantly calculate, you can constantly look and see if you're ahead, if you're behind. But if you use finances in that logical stuff to create a principle out of, then you can take that into your spirituality and you can take that into relationships. Absolutely. And
that's why Jesus, he talked about finances more than he talked about anything else. Not because he wanted money, but the principles are transferable across so many different things. If you learn how to function with your finances with faith, you'll function in your family with faith, you'll function in your job with faith. And, yeah.
So if you met someone new and you had to invest time in them before they reciprocated and given you everything of value, how long would you invest before you looked at it every day and said, this is a loss?
That's a good question.
Interesting.
What's Joe's answer?
What? I invest in everyone. I really don't care about wins, returns, losses, yeah. And it's a way easier that way.
Yeah, I think you invest in people, you win every time.
That's it.
It's true. Sure. So flip the...
I love derailing. It's one of my favorite things to watch. You come in here with a solid plan and me just curveball the crap out of you. I love it. And I'm sorry, but I love it.
Well, that's good. It keeps me on my toes. Keeps me fresh. So the delayed gratification, to circle back, yes. Right? Let me Jen Psaki this thing.
Yes.
To circle back, you know, we have so many things in our lives that aren't built in a day. You know, the adage, Rome isn't built in a day. You know, your investments aren't built in a day. None of this stuff is built in a day. Youngstown Studio hasn't been built in a day. I mean, you bought this place when it was Youngstown Computers, but called it Youngstown Studio because you knew what you were building towards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've sat here with two tiny little webcams and, you know, that was the first spot that we did anything. And then you built a stage and then you built a back studio and you've done all this very intentionally. But again, this is not the final layout of Youngstown Studio. This isn't even the final resting place of Youngstown Studio. I know the dream is bigger. Now, I don't know what it looks like or what the address is or where, you know, any of that stuff. And maybe this will always be a part of the Youngstown Studio family, but there's more to be done. And so, as you look at that, how do you stay content, but also hungry?
Okay. That's temptation, baby.
That's a hard one.
So yeah. Here's Youngstown Studio.
Yeah.
I had the ability, because I had Youngstown Studio planned out, I had the resources, I had the time to be able to just do Youngstown Studio in like one day, make it all done the way that it was, right? Mm-hmm. I knew what every studio was going to look like. I knew how it was going to go. Now, if you had $10,000 mm-hmm. and you had an investment account, would you just do $10,000 all in one day and invest it?
No.
Why?
Well, because you might be wrong.
Could be wrong. Like, then what? What's after the 10,000? You just kind of sit back and watch it and now you're idle. Mm. Or what if I said, hey, why don't you do $500 every day?
Yeah.
Well, the next $500 is what keeps you engaged because you got to do a second one. And you say, well, what if it goes up? What if it goes down? Well, what if I build this studio? Right. And then, you know, I can build another studio after that and another studio out of that. That's more for me than anybody else. Mm. Right. I'm not doing it as a safe play because it's going to get built either way.
So you're saying you had the resources to do this all in one
shot. All in one time. Yep.
And you chose to do it incrementally.
So if it's a perpetual thing where it's $200 a week in the blind, that's what I'm doing with this place. See, I circled back.
Nah, that was big good. Time. That was good. So what is the play? What's the next $500
in this place?
Yeah.
Okay. So education. So we're going to deal with kids and we're going to build a classroom. So the next thing's going to be food where we're going to do cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one is going to be a classroom where we teach what we do here.
Nice. And so what do you have to do to prep for that?
I don't know. We've been dreaming the last couple times at the table, find out what that looks like and you know what it feels like. What I like most about it, like up to this point, it was pretty much came out of my brain. Mm-hmm. And so that everybody else kind of sees it. But now I'm like letting other people incorporate their things, and it's going to watch this Frankenstein effect happen here. It's going to be pretty cool.
Does that scare you or excite you?
It excites me.
Okay.
How about you?
Some dreamers, they love to have the dream and it's their baby and they kind of walk it around and they're like, I'll show you, you can give me your 2 cents, but it's mine. I'm a collaborator in a lot of sense, but there are things that I'm like, I know what I want that to look like and feel like. And so you can tell me what you want, but that's what we're doing. Do you have pieces like that, that you're like, yeah, that's cool that you have that idea, but this is what I'm feeling.
There are pieces that I give up complete control over, sure. And it's just, I really don't care what happens to you. So it's like, Ryan, that wall over there, here's some markers, do what you will, but keep the confines of the tape.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say to our team, you know, that you get two boundaries to live in. So it's kind of like a boat going down the water. You can row as fast as you want. And I've got a budget over here and I've got the vision over here. When you hit that side, I'll just push the boat back out in the middle. And you hit
exactly
that side,
right.
I'll push the boat back out in the middle. But row away. You want to go quick? Go quick.
Yep.
But yeah, as long as you stay inside those two confines, like I don't need to tell you how to row the boat. I don't need to tell you what the boat looks like. You know, you want to have three boats or whatever, but just get down the river.
But it's almost a certain thing when you do give it that control, it becomes a different thing. And that's the part that most, you know, entrepreneurs and type A's are afraid of is what if it becomes something that's different than, entirely. You know, what, yeah, for it is. And I'm like, well, let's see, you know, I'm game.
Well, I mean, recovery ministry at the church is a great example of this. So not a world I'm familiar with, not a clientele I'm familiar with, nothing about it is, I don't know anything. That's not part of my story. It's not part of my family's journey. And so, you know, in come Jed and Allie, and they have this vision and this passion and they're excited and it's part of their journey and part of their story. And I'm going, we can do this, but I don't know what this looks like. I don't have a vision for it or a dream for it because I just don't know what it looks like. But I can come alongside and I can just go on their passion and their fire, and I can dump some gasoline on it and I can step back and watch it go. And some things have worked really well. Other things, we tried it. It was nice. We'll do this instead. And I've learned through that process what that community needs, and I've gotten to be engaged in certain things. You and I've gotten to do some stuff. You know, with the folks in the addiction recovery community. And I just find it so fascinating to watch that vision kind of bubble up and come to life for them. And realistically, like I'm there on recovery nights, but I just sit there on the front row and just kind of watch. And it's super weird because there are times where I'm like, I wouldn't do it that way. But then they do it. And I'm like, that worked really well. I'm glad they did it that way.
Right. And you're kind of like my secret mentor on this, because I watch you say yes a whole lot to things that I know inside you're a little comfortable with, but you're willing to go
with it. A lot of times.
But you're so good at not like dismantling it or moving the energy from it by sharing what you really want to share, but you let it take shape.
Yeah, Sam hears that.
Yes.
I'm like, I can't believe they're doing this. And that's one of those things that I just was saying this at lunch today. By saying yes a lot, I'm very much a ready, fire, aim in a lot of decisions I make. And then I end up in spaces where I'm like, I shouldn't be here, but this really worked. And there are times I'm like, man, I shouldn't be here. This is weird. We won't do that again. But I find that I regret more when I pass on things than when I say yes and we just figure it out. Even the things that we say yes to, and I'm like, well, yeah, that was a few $1,000 mistake. But you know what? Look at where we ended up because we made that mistake. I'm glad we did that. And even the mistakes are, you know, they're not necessarily mistakes. We fail forward and we figure it out and we take the next step. So yeah, I would much rather have a leader that says yes too much than is squashing everything, you know, is pulling out their shotgun and every idea that comes, like, go ahead, say that one, and shooting it down. I would rather have somebody's like, you know what? Yeah, we're going to do that. I'm like, all right, well, take a swing at it. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, literally. And if you start calculating the multi-dimensional thing benefits from things, if you take all the regrets of things you didn't pull the trigger on and you compare it with the ones that really went flop and you take those values, you're like, you lost way more on the opportunity that you passed every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's good to see you today, and it was good to be back. And you know, don't delay your gratification too much, but take your time and do the incremental things. And we'll be back here for some more delayed gratification next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.